From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made on Saturday at the Workers United Union Hall in Rochester when County Legislator James Shepard announced his run for mayor of Rochester. Shepard has served for many years in law enforcement, including a stint as police chief. He's been in the county legislature, and now he's looking for the top job in City Hall. Now, during his announcement event, Shepard said he would lay out his ideas for helping the city in much more detail in the months to come. So, what is motivating this run? Well, Shepard said the city is not rudderless, but essentially leaderless. He said the makings are in place for Rochester to have a resurgence, but it requires great leadership, and Shepard does not see that leadership coming from the current mayor, Lovely Warren. As the mayoral campaign progresses, you will hear from all candidates on this program. This is the first in our series because this is the first confirmed candidate. Jim Shepard, welcome back to Connections. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for the invite.
Well, and thank you for confirming what people knew for a long time. A lot of people have assumed this would be a three-way race. You, the current mayor, Lovely Warren, and perhaps former television journalist Rachel Barnhart, who has not confirmed her candidacy. But a lot of people are assuming it's going to be a three-way race. I want to ask you, first and foremost, as you called for transparency yesterday, transparency here. Be straight with everybody here. The first time you thought about running for mayor, when is the first time you really thought about running for mayor of Rochester?
1985. You laugh, but I'm saying
that's true. You've thought about it 1985.
1985.
Okay. And when did you really get serious about it, you know, leading up to Saturday's announcement then?
I think when I retired from the police department and my game plan, I've said this many times, that I was going to do nothing, just sit on the couch, eat Cheetos. But once I passed about 3 months or so, I wanted to do something. I volunteered at the New Beginning School. Then I had people reach out to me relative to the county. Paul Haney was going was term limited, and that was a possibility. So I decided to run in that position. Obviously, I was successful in that race. That was a great eye-opener for me relative to how to run a race. And then, obviously, in the time that I've been in the Monroe County Ledge, it's shown me a lot relative to how legislation works and all those pieces.
Okay, and so you don't hide the fact this is something that's been on your mind for a while.
And I don't say that, you know, like I said, 1985, and I say it in jest, but
I'm
at the same time,
it was a long
it's
plan.
Not
sure.
Just. It's you know, I'll give you this story. You know, when I went in the police department in 1981, and part of our process was asking everybody to stand up, state their name, and what you want to do and where you want to go. And a lot of people said they want to be detectives and K-9 and SWAT. I said I wanted to be the chief of police. And so I'm a firm believer in putting your vision out there and not being afraid of it. And that's the only way you can attain what you want to attain.
Now, you resigned from your position as police chief shortly after Lovely Warren was elected mayor. Did she ask you to resign, Jim?
No, she did not.
She didn't?
No.
How's your was it a bad relationship with her, a negative relationship?
I can't say we had a bad relationship. Obviously, from the time I became chief in 2010, we worked well together, I would assume. And then once she announced that she was going to run, I knew that from my perspective, that was not an administration I wanted to work in.
Okay. And why not then?
I think there were a number of factors in terms of how that all started. I believe it, for me, the decision was made in March of 2013. As part of the designation process, I think she stated that she had initiated policing in the spirit of service. That was something that I came in the door talking about. I think during my swearing in December of 2010, I talked about policing in the spirit of service. And my philosophy then, as it is now, is that our role as police officers isn't to dominate neighborhoods or be oppressive. Our role is to serve. And that's the first role of public safety.
Okay, but people are wondering now, you know, you resign when she takes over, and is this a personal sort of, you know, is the relationship that you had with her cool enough that this race is personal for you in any way?
Not personal at all. I mean, I look at the city, I look at where we are, I look at where we should be, I look at the things that have been done over the last 3 years. I've talked to so many people out in the neighborhoods, talked to developers, talked to employers, and one thing that you find is that, one, there's no transparency. Number two, it's not inclusive. And I think one thing that really jumps out at me is that the city's really being torn apart in any number of ways. You know, if you talk about race, it's being torn apart. If you want to talk about geography is being torn apart. You know, you have neighborhoods against neighborhood. You have neighborhoods that don't feel that they have a role in what goes on for them. So those are the things that have come to me, and it's from my reaching out and having conversations.
So when you said this weekend at your announcement event that you feel that there is no effective leadership, that you're essentially saying Mayor Warren is not an effective leader. Is that why? Because you're being told, whether it's neighborhoods, whether it's economic leaders, that there isn't cohesion? I mean, can you tell us why you think that this mayor is not an effective leader?
If you look at the data points, you know, let's talk education. Have they improved over the last 3 years? No. If you look at employment, have we, you know, increased our employment, jobs coming into the city? No. Do you look at our development? Do you see that there's a vision or a plan for the city downtown or out in the neighborhoods? No. So those are the things that have stood out for me. And I think that one of my things of coming up in the police department, you know, at one point in time, I worked in neighborhood empowerment. And in that job, what you learn is that everything has to be done as a collaborative effort. It can't be Jim Shepherd wants to do X. It should be we want to do X.
Okay, so before we get into some of the things that are happening in terms of economic development and see where you stand on those, I want to just ask you, you know, Mayor Warren defeated Tom Richards the last time around, and Tom Richards himself was at your announcement on Saturday. Many of his supporters are backing you. The local Democratic Party has really been fractured for years. I mean, I don't think that's a mystery, right? So is it logical to think that your candidacy only continues that divide, or can you possibly bring the factions together?
My vision is to bring the factions together.
But how?
One, by reaching out. I think by sitting down and having those conversations, whether it's with the Gantt faction, whether it's Morelli faction, whether it's the people who are disenfranchised, and letting them know that my role is not to represent any team. I'm not in this to represent a team. You know, I know that's part of the conversation. People want to say that he's with this group or that group, or Tom Richards was at his event. That's not what it's about. To me, it's really about being a unifying force, and I believe I can do that.
Okay. And, you know, when I talked to, for example, Jamie Romeo, the current chair of the Democratic Party locally, the first time she was on this program was not long after she became chair, but I recall that conversation. She sits down in that job, and a few weeks later, it's a hard job, right? I mean, I don't think anybody denies it's a hard job, but she hadn't even had a face-to-face conversation with David Gantt, who's an important figure and a towering figure in the Democratic Party. Absolutely vital in terms of that kind of outreach. She hadn't even had a meeting with him. Are you going to be able to sit down with people who are not happy that you're running, who viewed this campaign with some suspicion, frankly, who viewed this as, you know, the quote-unquote Richards people, fairly or unfairly? Are you going to be able to do that?
Most definitely. To me, I've already envisioned it in my mind where I want to be. You know, growing up in the neighborhood, you get in a fight. When the fight's over, you shake hands and you don't let it linger. And that's how I envision this. You know, it's going to be what it's going to be. You're going to have sides. You're going to have people on different teams as we go through. Somebody's going to come out a winner. And my vision is at the end of that, we make this thing come together.
But Jim, you know, you want to be the mayor of Rochester, and you have been in policing. You've been in this community. This really is your community for years now. So you've seen the split kind of taking place. You just referred to it the way a lot of people refer to it, as a quote-unquote Gantt faction and a quote-unquote Morelli faction. Why do you think this has happened?
That I don't know. And it's a great question you ask, is because one of the things that, if you look into my background, is that I've been non-political for probably 38 years in my time in Rochester. And one thing that I'm free of is those slights that other people have in terms of grudges. I have no animosity towards anybody, so I'm not coming in with baggage. I'm not coming in saying that, you know what, 2 years ago so-and-so didn't support me, or 5 years ago so-and-so promised me something they didn't deliver. For me, it's just a matter of, you know what, it's really about this city and really about making it better and really about bringing the people together, because once we come together, I think we can do anything we want. And I think we've lost so much over the years because we have not been a singular force.
Talking to James Shepherd, who declared his candidacy for the mayor of Rochester on Saturday. He is a county legislator, former police officer, and of course, former police chief of the city of Rochester. And Jim, you said on Saturday you're going to have a lot more specifics and a platform in the weeks to come. Where can people find out more and jump online? You got a website right now. What is it?
It's shepherdforrochester.com, Shepherd for Rochester, one word. And obviously we have a Facebook page as well.
And I know I've seen you on Twitter and social media. So shepherdforrochester.com, you want to learn more. But why announce your candidacy without sort of this fully formulated economic plan?
Excellent question. And one of the things that I believe is important is that for me to come up with a plan in a vacuum leads to failure. I really believe that to have a plan that's going to work is I need to sit down with the stakeholders and get their input, that we have a shared vision. I've seen it before where somebody says, this is what I'm going to do, and it fails because of the fact that the players that are important, the people who are impacted by it, were not in the room. And I don't want to start off in that way.
But you haven't been meeting with stakeholders, you know, sort of privately leading up to this announcement?
I have, and mainly in terms of finding out, okay, what are the issues? What are the problems? What is not working? You know, what do you feel that needs to be done better? It's really been a reaching out as opposed to let's formulate a plan. It's really about finding out the issues that are important to them.
Okay. Do you view your candidacy as a blank canvas on the economic side, or do you feel that you've got some ideas already, though?
I do have some ideas. I think one of the things that, you know, for our city is employment. Everybody talks about employment, and we have not had employment of magnitude come to this city in a long time. One of the things that I think would be important is not so much having a casino downtown, but going for something where we bring in a factory or somewhere where you can bring 2,000 workers in, you know, 1,500 workers, and give them a meaningful wage, not looking for, you know, minimum wage, but a meaningful wage so that we can change the dynamic of poverty in the city.
Everybody would love to see a factory. Yep. Everybody would love to see manufacturing. Everybody would love to see a kind of return. Go, you want to jump in? Go ahead.
Yes. And, you know, when I say a factory, it doesn't have to be a factory. You know, one of the things that has been successful, you know, you got a ton of them out in Henrietta, is these call centers. You know, it's a great opportunity for people who don't necessarily have technical skills, but they may have the skills to be able to call somebody on the phone and have that conversation to get them to do what they need to do. So when I say factory, I'm thinking large box.
Large employer.
With a lot of employees.
One place, large employer, which largely, when you talk call centers, for example, you know, they're targeting places like Victor and Henrietta and the outlying areas. They're not often going to the city really anymore, right?
Because I don't believe that we...
What changes that?
I don't think we've pitched them. I think that we need to...
You really don't think the current mayor is working on that or is pitching those employers?
Well, I can't say whether she has or has not. The fact of the matter is it hasn't come to fruition. So I guess the truth is in the pudding. You know, if you were accomplished in that, it would have been the situation where they're coming to Rochester as opposed to Victor and Henrietta.
Okay. So you think as mayor, you would use your position to be much more forceful in bringing companies here, yes?
Yes. I think that is the role of a mayor in terms of being a regional leader, not just the city of Rochester, but working with the county government, working with the towns, and looking at it as a collaboration between all of us, because we all have a vested interest. It's not just the city. It's not just the county. It's not the county or the towns. It's really about all of us coming together and trying to make this the hub, because if the Rochester dies, this region dies.
All right, let's hit some recent news items then on as swiftly as we can on the economy. Parcel 5 has been talked about a lot. A lot of rumblings that the city is on the verge of making an announcement, though I reached out last week and City Hall told me that they are still working with some of the details before a decision is made there. Have you taken a look at those proposals, and was there one that you would have favored if you were the mayor?
I have not had the opportunity to look at, you know, the nitty-gritty of the proposals. I do value the fact that there's a Galena proposal on the table. I think one of the other proposal submitters said, I love that plan.
That's right. That's right. Glenn Kellogg, who's you may know him as not only an economic sort of urban planner, but also the guy behind Hart's Grocers, put together a plan and then saw the Sutton, the Galena Dutton plan and said, you know, that actually looks pretty good to me, which was
interesting. And so that is really, really what you want to be in that position where it's not just a decision made by one person. You really want it to be where, say, when the decision is made, everybody who has a vested interest says, you know what, that's a great decision.
Okay, so as someone now running for mayor and who's kind of watched it from the outside, do you think the city has run that process well?
I think in terms of transparency, has been lacking. And that is something that I've heard any number of stakeholders, whether it's developers or contractors, is that transparency has been weak and the process has not been consistent.
Okay. When it comes to La Marqueta, Mayor Warren was on this program recently, along with some other community stakeholders, saying that it's time for North Clinton Avenue to get this sort of cultural and business hub. Do you support that?
Wholeheartedly support it. Again, when I referred to my time in NET, that was 1998. My area of responsibility was Sector 10, which was everything north of everything south of Clifford Avenue. And at that time, La Marqueta was, you know, in the works. It's been in the works for a very long time. If it's something that can be pulled off, I think it would be a great accomplishment. That area definitely needs some economic development and a change because, you know, so much has happened in that area relative to whether it's violence, whether it's drugs. It's been a pretty depressed neighborhood.
Okay. And Mayor Warren's administration has moved forward with not only filling roughly a third of the inner loop so far, but I think there's a lot of assumption that eventually the entire inner loop will be gone. Should the entire inner loop be filled, Jim?
I think that the plan to fill in the portion of the inner loop from Monroe Avenue over to East Main Street is a great idea. I think what is lacking relative to that development is vision. You know, what is the vision of what's going to go there? Right now, we throw out RFPs saying, somebody build something, please. And I think what we need to have is a vision of what we want to see there in terms of walkability, in terms of retail, in terms of housing, apartments, whether it's condos or whatever. It should have a vision of what you want, and then you ask people to come build it.
Okay. We're talking to Jim Shepherd, who's running for mayor. And listeners, if you want to call the program, we'll get to your calls coming up here. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You know, some of the most consistent criticism of your run has come from your tenure as police chief. And your critics have said your policies hurt people in poverty and people of color. So let's address that specifically. You instituted a plan called Operation Cool Down in, I think it was the summer of 2013? 13. And, you know, the idea is, as you announced it with Mayor Richards, and interestingly enough, if you go to the City of Rochester's website, you'll see that announcement press conference, which you can still watch. Mayor Richards there, Chief Shepherd at the time, and you see Lovely Warren, who was a member of City Council at the time there, along with a number of other community stakeholders there, talking about making the streets safer. But within Operation Cool Down, some of the details, some of the individual strategies have bothered, I would say, to say the least, bothered the New York Civil Liberties Union. They wrote a plan that summer saying that your plan violated civil liberties. He said, and they say you targeted citizens for minor offenses, broken taillights, a bicycle that didn't have a bell on it. And they say those are the kinds of enforcements that led to a spiral of problems for citizens in places like Ferguson, where things start with something small, but they get out of control. Under the guise of law enforcement and protecting communities, but they target people in poverty and people of color. Is that wrong?
I'll start off with in terms of the why. And I think that's the most important thing for people to hear. For me, in 30-something years of policing, everything I did was about saving lives. And, you know, when you talk about the strategies or you talk about what happened in the summer of 2013 or the summer of 2012, it was really about saving lives. And, you know, there was a time in my career, early in my career, where when you knew that there was going to be violence or you might know that Shepherd's got a beef against Corey Johnson or whatever, you'd let it happen. And when one of them got shot, you'd say, okay, we need to go look for Shepherd because they had a beef. And then as we've progressed, you learn that, you know what, you get between those beefs. You know if there's somebody's got a beef for somebody, you try to take them off the street in whatever way you can so that beef doesn't escalate into violence. Every year, state police, Monroe County sheriffs, all your regional towns talk about, on New Year's Eve, we're going to have proactive DWI enforcement. They put that out there not because they want to have lots of arrests for DWIs. They put that out there so that people don't drive around drunk. And so a lot of what I did was, one, being transparent in terms of what we were going to do as far as strategies, but also putting it into these young men, into their minds that, guess what? Maybe I'll leave that gun home today, because every shooting I've ever heard of has started with a very small slight that, because that gun's right there, they use it. And if it's a matter of them having to go home and get it, a lot of times that is the pause that prevents that violence from escalating. So again, you know, as far as policing strategies, at the end of the day, I will say to anybody, my sole purpose was to save lives. Last point I'll make, I always made a point when there was a homicide of trying to go visit that family. And the reason I would go visit that family, because I wanted to feel their pain. I wanted them to give my condolences, but I also wanted to feel their pain because I didn't want it to be about just numbers. You know, homicide number 32. I'm worried that there's going to be 33. No, I'm worried because some mother is going to lose her son. And I don't care who it is. Their son could be a dope dealer, gangbanger, choir boy, whatever. If you are around these mothers and see that heartbreak, you know you have to do something.
Anything in Operation Cool Down that you regret?
I can't say I regret. You know, a lot of people have said, oh, Shepherd, he's stop and frisk. Stop and frisk in New York City was a philosophy. That was not a philosophy in the Rochester Police Department.
But they think Cool Down looks like a version of stop and frisk. Do you disagree?
I disagree. I disagree. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I don't know if you recall, part of that was, one, me sending letters to known gang members, telling them that, yes, as a result of your involvement possibly in violence, that we're going to do X, Y, and Z. We would target them. We'd call them in and say, listen, we know you're part of this group. If your members in that group are involved in violence, we're going to put attention to the entire group. So a lot of it was strategic in terms of dealing with individuals that we knew were being violent.
Okay. Now, Stop and Frisk itself has been controversial. A president-elect now has talked about the need to bring it back more nationally. Does it work? Would you support it in Rochester?
I think obviously what we saw in New York in terms of their use of Stop and Frisk was controversial, and I think that it was something that over time the data point showed disproportionately impacted minorities. And so I don't think that's something that any police department can survive if that's their philosophy, is just, you know, stopping and frisking people based on race or where they're standing on the street. I think targeted enforcement is the future, where, okay, we know who the players are, we know what the beefs are, how can we get between them so it doesn't escalate into bodies on the street.
Talking to Jim Shepherd, we'll get to your phone calls coming up here. I just want to kind of close the loop on some of the questions about his term as chief of police for the city of Rochester, because early in his candidacy for mayor, that's where some of the criticisms come from. It's not a surprise to Jim. I know you know that your record's going to be looked over, as everyone should be. And in the fall of 2015, a billboard sparked some debate in our community. It was a picture of a police badge with the words Blue Lives Matter. And a local student and an aspiring local reporter named Timoni Correa Buntley wrote a piece about it, in which you were quoted. And you recall that story? Did you talk to her, or did you talk to others about that billboard? You recall the billboard?
No.
Okay, the Blue Lives Matter billboard. So let me go ahead and quote from her story and tell me if sort of these words reflect how you feel about that. She writes, Shepherd believes the original movement should be about all lives rather than just black lives mattering. And Shepherd said, and this is her piece, still her piece, quote, Shepherd said, black lives matter? Well, show me. People get so angry over whites killing blacks or police killing blacks, but what about when we kill each other? In fact, the data shows the deaths of blacks caused by law enforcement are not as high as people think. I believe that all lives matter. No matter who it is that gets killed, we have to remember that they were somebody's baby. Someone is always going to be grieving. End quote. Did you say that? Do you stand by that?
Most definitely sounds like something I would say, and I want to reiterate that in terms of death, because I really believe that, you know, one of the things that for the issues of Black Lives Matter, it relates to, you know, law enforcement, but I also think that if we took an approach where we're unified in dealing with wrongful deaths, you know, whether it's the police, whether it's friends on the block, I think we would have a greater impact on reducing it, period. You know, I know that a lot of times when there's a police-involved shooting, whether it's in the United States or somewhere in the United States or in the city of Rochester, people rise up and, you know, and they protest. And I know that as a policeman, it impacts your thinking process of when you're in those situations where you feel you might want to use deadly or need to use deadly physical force. You tend not to. You're going to hesitate because you know the scrutiny you're going to go under. And I think at the same time, in the neighborhoods, we need to have that same type of response where people realize that, you know what, it's not okay to deal with violence. I mean, to bring violence as a result of a dispute. So often you hear of a shooting in the street and they'll say, well, you know, that's the way of the street. That shouldn't be the mindset. The mindset should be, you know what? It's a life. We shouldn't be taking it. I don't care if it's the police or a gang member against another gang member. We should say there's a sanctity in life. And I think that we will be able to accomplish not just, you know, reduction in police shootings, but we could have a reduction in death, period.
Jim, I'm sure you're aware that not only the leadership of the Black Lives Matter movement, but a lot of supporters of it, they hear the phrase, quote, all lives matter, and they take it to mean black lives don't matter. Because, let's be honest, the phrase black lives matter means black lives matter too. I mean, I can tell you as a white male, white lives always matter. I mean, they've been prioritized in this country. That's just sort of been our country's history. And so, are you sort of sensitive to how Black Lives Matter views the phrase all lives matter or blue lives matter? Or do you disagree with that it means black lives don't matter?
You know, I talked about for 32 years of my police existence was about saving lives.
Yeah.
And during that 32 years, it was mainly about saving black lives because, sadly to say, when we look at the violence picture, those are the victims. And so it's always mattered to me. And being an African-American man, it's always something that has been painful to me. You know, you don't know the pain that I may have gone through when I roll up on a scene and I see somebody who looks just like me deceased on the street, or going to somebody's house that looks like my mother telling her, I'm sorry for what happened to your son. So for me, it's a matter of, I think people get confused and think because I put that uniform every day that determined who I am. But I was Jim Shepherd before I put that uniform on, and I don't wear that uniform anymore. So, you know, as far as my heart and where it is and the caring that I have for people who are the victims of violence, it is deep.
Do you support the Black Lives Matter movement?
I do. I do. And I think my coming out speech, I referred to their movement relative to how that was handled. And I know where I would have been coming from. Because number one, with the Occupy Rochester movement, we were there. We talked to them. We engaged them. We told them this is what we have to do. And I personally arrested everybody there.
Let me just back up, because I think what you're referring to is some of your criticism of Mayor Warren and sort of what happened last summer, if I'm right. So let's make sure our listeners understand what we're talking about. Last July, across the country, I think there were maybe a dozen cities in one single night in which there were public demonstrations in support of Black Lives Matter. There was a lot that happened last summer. A lot of incidents. There was a lot of buildup. Rochester had its own demonstrations, and there were something along the lines of 70 or 80 plus arrests, one of the highest, if not the highest, number of arrests in any city in the country, whereas you go to Memphis and other cities and there were zero or very few. And you were critical of how that was handled in what specific way, Jim? What was the problem you had with that?
Number one, I sat there and watched the news. For the first time ever, I think, in my memory, there was a live feed of a protest in the evening.
Yep.
You know, usually it's, you know, at 6 o'clock, and then once rush hour's done, it's over with. But this was a live feed. As I'm watching it, I see that it's not a matter of them, like, breaking windows or throwing bottles or, you know, pushing and shoving on the police. It was just a matter of them occupying a section of East Avenue. And then during the whole evening, I'm listening to the news anchor ask, you know, where's the mayor? Where's the leadership? Where's the plan? And I don't think that the plan was we're going to arrest all these people. I'm not going to put my thoughts into somebody else's head, but what it appeared to me was that the decision to shut it down at 10 o'clock and make all these arrests was more tied to economics than it was to public safety.
The chief of police, Michael Simonelli, came on this program and said that that's not correct. He said that for much of the day and into the evening, police were not wearing what they would call protective gear or what the public calls riot gear, that they were not deploying any kind of what the public perceived as aggression, that they were trying to allow people to demonstrate peacefully, and that only when the demonstrators got aggressive did the police respond with arrest. That's what the Chief Simonelli said. And he answered the question. I said, where was Mayor Warren? Why wasn't Mayor Warren down this? We saw mayors in other cities literally linking arm, walking hand in hand, arm in arm with demonstrators, praying with them, sitting in the street with them. Mayor Warren was not there. And Chief Simonelli did have an answer for that. And I want to listen to what Chief Simonelli said about why we didn't see Mayor Warren that night.
At that point, I asked her not to go down there, because at that point, the information I got from Commander Morabito about the confrontations that were occurring, one concern was I wanted to be able to ensure her safety. And secondly, at that point, I did not feel her presence there would have been helpful. So, you know, I'll take the hit for that. That was my request.
That's Chief Simonelli. So Jim, you know, he's saying, how can you be critical of City Hall when he's making a direct appeal to her to, you know, just tonight, don't come out?
My position on that is simply this, and I've said this a little while ago. Personally, I would not be afraid of our people. And I'd been down there on that avenue because, one, they would expect me to be there as the leader of the city. And two, I think it would have changed the dynamic of the interactions. I'm going to go backwards, too, because I'm going to disagree with a statement that was made that we didn't wear certain types of equipment. Because I recall that when the group protesters went towards the Museum of Play, there was a skirmish line. There was a photograph of a skirmish line where you had officers lined up with the shields, with the, I call it the Star Wars equipment, breastplates, thigh plates, shin plates, and a line of protesters. Basically, the picture just is static.
During the daytime, I believe,
yes.
Or at least before the sun set.
Yes. And that was before the group dismantled and then got back together later in the night.
So you're questioning the narrative put out by the city and the
when
police.
When I saw that tweet and was put out on a tweet,
yeah,
I said, this is not going to end good. just by that presence. Now, I understand relative to some of the issues that were going on all over the country. You know, obviously the issues in Dallas had occurred, and I understand that. And from a law enforcement perspective, there was this apprehension of, okay, what could happen here relative to what happened there. I understand it. But at the same time, just looking at the appearance of it, I knew it was not going to end well.
Okay. And you're saying if you had been mayor, you and the chief of police had said to you, Jim, tonight, I can't guarantee your safety, and I don't think it'll help if you're going to be down here. You're going to overrule that, and you're going to be down at the scene.
From my entire existence in the city of Rochester, I haven't been afraid to go nowhere, and I would not be afraid to go anywhere in the city in the future.
The mayor didn't say she was afraid.
No, I'm not saying that, but I'm just speaking from my perspective that if the chief told me I don't want you to come, I'd say, listen, dude, I'm in charge here. You're going to walk with me, and we'll go down and talk to these people.
Okay. On the matter of policing, a little bit more, and then we're going to turn it over to our phone callers. As we talk to Jim Shepherd, who's running for mayor of the city of Rochester, shepherdforrochester.com, if I'm remembering that correctly, if you want to learn more for his website. He's the first confirmed candidate in the race here. There's also been a lot of people since you announced 48 hours ago, and frankly in the days leading up to when people were aware you were going to be running, sharing some video that goes back to May 1st, 2013, and the arrest of a man named Benny Warr. And Benny Warr is a man who has one leg. He uses a wheelchair to get around. He was waiting for the bus. And the video shows officers kind of shouting with him, and all of a sudden they take him to the ground. Warr said that he was not only maced, he was kicked in the head, that he had been threatened by an officer. And that, you know, this is a man with one leg in a wheelchair being taken to the ground by officers. And that the criticism of you was that as chief, you came out later and you were sort of flippant about it. Instead of saying, look, when we're wrong and we were wrong here. Were your officers wrong at that moment?
Relative to an internal investigation, it was done. And I believe that it was complete and thorough and impartial. It was determined that when they put hands on with Benny Warr while he was seated in the wheelchair, he started to fight with them. As a result of that fight, the wheelchair was tipped over, and then they proceeded through the process of handcuffing him. So, and based on what the officer said, based on what Benny Warr said, our determination was that the use of force was not excessive and that it was appropriate for the circumstances.
And you still feel that way today?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Do you feel that police made any errors under your term that you could look at and say that was excessive, that was not well handled?
I can say this over my tenure as a policeman, and I want to put this out there too. I spent 5 years in internal affairs. Before I went to internal affairs, I would have said that, you know, a policeman would never do anything wrong because I'd never been around cops who did something wrong. In my tenure in internal affairs, when I left there, I said, if you told me a cop did X, Y, and Z, I'd say it's possible, because the reality of it is that cops have done bad things. I don't think it's indicative of the law enforcement community or the Rochester Police Department that because Officer Shepherd did something, that's what they all do. And I've been in positions where I've terminated officers. Officers have got extensive suspensions relative to behaviors or incidents that have occurred. But the key thing for me has always been about being fair. Fair to the complainant, fair to the officer. And there's going to be instances where something happens between you and I. And when you do that investigation, you're left with he said, she said. And so if you don't have anything that really adds to that investigation, you can't come out and say, I believe this officer's wrong. And you're not saying that the civilian is wrong either. It's just a matter of it's unprovable. And so there are instances where a person will come and say, this happened to me. And you listen to them and you believe them, but you can't prove it. And I think that's the really frustrating thing a lot of times for civilians is that they know what happened because it happened to them. But the investigation is not able to confirm that. And so a lot of times that becomes the issue. But I also was adamant that you be fair in the process.
Sure. But do you think people of color are treated differently by police in this country?
I think undoubtedly that's an obvious circumstance that based on what has come to light, whether it's through videos or different things, that yes, there have been instances where police have basically screwed up and done wrong things and done criminal things. But again, you treat those as singular incidents as opposed to it being the color of the badge.
Okay. And do you think body cameras are going to help?
Tremendously. Tremendously. I think in terms of going with the body cameras, great move. It was something that had been discussed prior to my leaving the police department. You know, when we had initiated the police foundation, that was one of the things that we had discussions about them purchasing those body cams, because It wasn't something that we felt that necessarily the budget we'd be able to absorb, but we did discuss the possibility of the Police Foundation, you know, looking into that because, number one, it would tell you the truth, and number two, it would make citizens feel better about those interactions. And in some instances, I think it would change the way that citizens acted because once you know you're on video, it changes the way you act.
Last question before I turn it over to our listeners. The mayor was in here on the program recently, as I said, talking about her vision for La Marqueta, which Jim has said he would like to see as well. And during that program, she was asked about why she wasn't more forceful in speaking out against the comments made during the last political campaign by a Republican who ran for state assembly and won, Joseph Arrigo, who grew up, I think, on Carter, but he grew up in the northeast of the city, hasn't been back there in probably 50 years or hasn't lived there in 50 years. But the comments he made on this program shocked a lot of people. He said he wouldn't even go down to parts of the city, even in an armored car, and then he described it as kind of a wild, wild west where bullets are flying all over the place all the time. The mayor said, why didn't she speak out? Bill Johnson had said that if you don't speak out, you're essentially condoning those things. Mayor Warren said she disagreed. She said that certain things don't even merit a response. They're so ridiculous, and that she didn't want to draw more attention to it. As mayor, would you have handled it the same way?
I would have spoke out, and I would have spoke out because, again, I think that as being the leader of the city and the citizens of the city, and a lot of times when things happen, people look to you for guidance. They look for you to fight for them, to speak for them. And I think the citizens of Rochester, particularly people in the Northeast, would have wanted to know that, you know, City Hall had their back.
Are you concerned about the impact on the reputation of neighborhoods that are trying to continue to improve, to attract new jobs? As you talk about, when you want new companies to come, is there a problem with reputation that reality doesn't match in this city?
The city of Rochester has suffered relative to violence and crime probably my entire career here. You know, if you Google New York State, you Google crime, Rochester is always one of those cities that, in terms of violent crime, ranks very high. So it's something that we need to improve. I think that should be priority one. You know, we talk about bringing in jobs and how can we help economic development. The first thing we can do is make the city where investors are willing to invest. You know, I equate it to, or the analogy I use is when you're trying to sell your house. You know, you can live in your house and leave your clothes laying all over the place, but when you know somebody's going to come in and take a look, you clean it up, you paint, you do all these things so that when somebody walks in, it's like sparkling clean. Same thing goes for the city. We have to be in a position where, in terms of crime and certain issues, our city looks good so that somebody's willing to invest their money and make things better for our citizens.
All right, let's get our only break of the hour and come right back to your questions to fill out the hour with Jim Shepherd, the first confirmed candidate for mayor in the city of Rochester this year. Coming up in our second hour, a special from American Public Media. Say It Loud traces the last 50 years of black history through historically important speeches from African Americans across the political spectrum. You'll hear Malcolm X, Angela Davis, Martin Luther King Jr., of course, Toni Morrison, Colin Powell, and many others. Say It Loud next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. My guest is James Shepherd. He's running for mayor. He's a Democrat, and he is running, well, against, we would assume, Mayor Lovely Warren if she decides to run for re-election. We could also see a longtime journalist Rachel Barnhart enter the race, but she has not formally declared, even though she has put together the makings of a campaign. So right now we've got one confirmed candidate, and he's our guest in studio, and Noah in Rochester is first on the phones. Go ahead, Noah.
Hi, Mr. Shepherd. My question for you is, I think I saw somewhere this weekend that you were the only vote against the Office of Public Integrity at the county, and I was confused by that and wondering why you did that.
Thank you, Noah. And just a little bit of background here. There is an Office of Public Integrity that Cheryl Donolfo and Monroe County created. Jim is a county legislator. And when they voted to create the office, they were creating certain parameters. And I think they got 28 out of 29 votes, and you were the one no vote. Why did you vote no?
When they initially did the legislation for the Office of Inspector General, it was just create the office. And I think I, at the time, provided them with the national standards for those types of offices. And they did make some significant changes in the legislation. However, what stood out for me was the simple fact that due to the history of Monroe County and the corruption has existed over the previous 12 years and the arrest that had come as a result of that, I felt that it was very important to include an independent committee to determine who should be the director of the Office of the Inspector General. And I say that because it's like having a really good watchdog. You know, that watchdog is going to bite the hand that feeds it. But if you have an independent watchdog, he's going to be able to do his job without being beholden to anybody. And I thought that was important enough for me to say, you know what, I do want an Office of Inspector General. But at the same time, somebody said, well, it meets the standard. You know what? Standards aren't supposed to be met. They're the basement. You know, you should be trying to reach the roof. And so I felt that the legislation didn't go far enough.
Okay. So Jim voted no because he wanted to see the standards even tougher. Let me get back to the phones. Matthew in Rochester. Go ahead, Matthew. Matthew, are there? Go ahead. Okay. Matthew, not there. Let me grab Dan in Rochester next. Go ahead, Dan.
Hi. My question is that, like, things seem to be going pretty well downtown, but I still see so many, like, vacant buildings when I drive around the city. What are you going to do about that?
Thank you, Dan. Jim, vacant buildings in Rochester.
Well, he specifically mentioned downtown, and I think that what we've seen with downtown, which has been a significant improvement, is ever since they took the buses off downtown and moved into the transit center, you're seeing that a lot of developers are jumping all over these properties, and that they are valuable. And I think that by having a process of working with the city and being transparent in what the city can do and encourage them to take advantage of these properties, that's what we have to do, is put ourselves in a position where they want to invest into downtown. And I think that in terms of making them want to invest, we do have to, you know, make the city safer, make it a situation where if we give them tax comita funds or whatever, breaks, there should be some conditions relative to who works there and who lives there in terms of them being city residents.
Okay. Are we handing out too many tax breaks to developers who want them? I mean, the developers, they have an advantage where they can say to the city, we don't want to come here unless you give us a great deal on this. And would you change the way that works?
I think two things are in play. In terms of giving tax breaks, I think that we were in a period of time where it was hard to bring people into here to invest. And so we came up with this strategy that, you know what, we'll give breaks. And I think they have helped people come in and take advantage of it. But I also think that what I said about, you know, some of the changes in terms of transportation downtown now have made these properties more valuable. So now we may not have to always give away something to get something. And then I think if we bring people in, there should be conditions in terms of who they hire, and it should be city residents.
All right, Matthew, back on the line. Go ahead, Matthew.
Hi. I happen to believe that the best answer to poverty is through jobs and job creation. So how are you going to get more jobs to Rochester?
Well, we were just talking about jobs, but let's hit poverty. Is the poverty initiative doing a good job, Jim?
I can't say whether they've done a good job because I don't think the numbers have changed. You know,
and it's a long term. I mean, we can't expect this to be in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, right, to be fair.
Poverty is a long road to hoe. I think that my parents used to say a long road to hoe is that it's not going to change overnight. I do think that something that Andrew Young said last year when he came to RIT relative to the Martin Luther King weekend, he talked about the fact that in Atlanta, you know, they did all these initiatives relative to poverty and helping people in the city and trying to change the dynamics of it. And what they found is that it just made more people come. And he put out there the fact that until you do something with providing jobs for people to work their way out of poverty, that is really going to be the only solution, is that you prepare people for the jobs, and jobs have to be here for them to take advantage of. And that is how, you know, that particular city was able to overcome their poverty problem to some extent. And so I think that really for Rochester, and, you know, I don't know the full extent of what their plans are, but it is about job readiness and preparation and bringing in work over the long haul. Those are the things that are going to make a difference. You know, the only way out of poverty is an education and a job.
Okay. Back to the phones, and David in Rochester next up. Go ahead, David.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I was inspired by a speech given recently by Mayor de Blasio of New York, and I wanted to tell you, Mr. Shepard, that I will only vote to elect or reelect a mayor of Rochester who publicly agrees with Mr. de Blasio's promises, and I'd like to tell you what he said. I'm quoting him directly. He said, if all Muslims are required to register, we will take legal action to block it. He said, if there are threats to federal funding for Planned Parenthood, we will ensure women receive the health care they need. And he said, if Jews or Muslims or members of the LGBT community or any community are victimized and attacked, we will find their attackers, we will arrest them, we will prosecute them. In other words, this mayor is daring to stand up to what's happening at the federal level with the election of Donald Trump. And I would like to hear you promise Rochesterians that you will agree with Mayor de Blasio's promises and that you will protect us as Mayor de Blasio has promised to protect New Yorkers.
All right, David, thank you. Go ahead, Jim.
Done.
That was easy, I guess.
Very easy.
Yeah, you're a Democrat. I assume you're not a Trump voter. What alarms you most about the next president, Jim?
Ooh. Well, first of all, I don't think he puts a lot of thought into what he has to say. Obviously, I don't think he likes people, and he doesn't like people that don't look like him. And I think that's a problem for our nation. I think that it has brought out those people who, you know, over the years, I'm going to back up. When I grew up in the South. My family's from Atlanta, and the thing about racism down there at the time was it was very in your face. When we moved to the North, it was a little more subdued, and I think that's what we've seen over the last 40, 50 years is racism has become subdued to an extent. And what Trump has done is gave people permission to bring that out, and that's what we've seen is where, you know, once the election came in, you had people putting swastikas on school buildings and people just saying whatever they felt because they felt, okay, now we can really say what we say, what we believe, or show what we feel. And so I think that in terms of as we move forward, I think the states and the cities and the municipalities have to stand up and say, we're not going to tolerate certain things. And I think that with the right resistance from governmental officials, he would not be able to accomplish his agenda in those regards.
All right, on Twitter, Jack says, will Mr. Shepard reinstitute the red light cameras at intersections where they might have improved safety? That's from Jack. Jim.
Obviously, the red light cameras were instituted before I came into play, actually 1 month before I came into play. They were voted on in October, and then they were installed, and I came in November. I was a staunch believer that the role of the red light cameras was to change driving behavior in terms of safety. I understand at some point people have felt that, you know, it targeted different intersections where people of color or minorities would pass through mostly. I knew from my time in the police department that the way that we determined where to put the cameras was based on data. You know, where are we having accidents? Where are people getting injured? And that's where you put the cameras. I don't think it's a situation where we're going to reinstitute them just with a change in mayorship. But I did think that it was sort of disingenuous with the timing of the removal of the cameras at this time.
Okay, Jenny says, does he believe in government consolidation, including school districts in Monroe County, to reduce inequality?
Yes. I think in terms of school district, and, you know, number one, I don't see it happening. But I really believe that when we have all these conversations about poverty and education and how to improve our schools, one thing that would do that is a consolidated school district for Monroe County. Take that out of play. I think that we need to go to a regional system where we have regional schools, magnet schools, where people from different demographics, different economic situations can come together, go to school together, and impact each other relative to diversity, relative to hope. Because I know that, you know, when you're a young kid and you're growing up in an environment where maybe success is determined to be hanging out on a corner, and you go to a school with somebody who's, you know, their father's a dentist, and you realize, you know what, I could be a dentist too. That creates hope and the possibilities for people in terms of how they vision where they can go. You know, and I talked about, you know, coming in the police department and saying, you know what, I want to be the chief. That's what you need young adults or young kids to see, is that, you know what, I want to be the president of the United States. I'm sure that at some point Barack Obama said that, and he made it happen. And I think that that's what we need to do, is put our kids in a situation where it's not segregated as it is, because school district is very segregated in the city of Rochester. We need to change that dynamic.
But Jim, if you're elected, you know, are you going to put it as a policy that you want to see countywide schools, even though you think it may be politically unlikely? Would you push for it? Or do you think it's such a non-starter that you'll focus, for example, on magnet schools right out of the gate?
I think in terms of moving the agenda.
Yeah.
Nothing's wrong with having the impossible dream, but I do think that if you start with something that can be done, you can move the agenda forward, as opposed to saying, I'm going to fight for consolidated
for the moon
district
and, maybe
and never get there.
Okay.
But I think magnet schools, regional schools would really be a great move forward.
Are you working with any groups like Great Schools for All or anybody else about that?
I haven't met with them. I think they've put some wonderful ideas on the table. Like I said, I agree with their platform, is that they see the same things, is that with the segregation we have in city school district, with the segregation based on economics, we are creating this cycle of poverty. And I don't think we're going to get out of it unless we change our schooling system. And I think the question was also about metro government.
Yeah, right.
And I think that we got to get away so much from our little kingdoms, you know. Think of it. You got, you know, 12 different police departments in the city, I mean in the county. You got probably 12 different supervisors and mayors. We really need to think in terms of what's best for the citizens of Rochester and Monroe County and come up with a system that, you know, in terms of money, in terms of taxes, in terms of development, we're really thinking of it regionally as opposed to little kingdoms.
All right. I've got about 40 seconds left. You've mentioned transparency a number of times. And if you're mayor, what do you mean by transparency that would be different compared to what we see at City Hall now?
One of the things that I did as police chief is that every quarter I put out crime stats. And the reason I put them out every quarter, because I wanted people, not based on fear or based on what they heard, you know, through their conversations over dinner, they would know where we stood on a quarterly basis. I think in terms of how we handle RFPs, you know, there should be a consistent process, and people should pretty much know how they're going to be judged when they submit for those RFPs, as opposed to it going into a closet, and then when the light of day hits on it, each time it's a little bit different. I think in terms of people being able to sit down with city government and work on what they want to see for their neighborhoods, that should be part of what the role of government is, not to dictate, but to facilitate.
All right, Jim Shepherd is running for mayor of the city of Rochester, the first officially declared candidate, shepherdforrochester.com. Jim, how quickly do you think we'll see more of the details in policy on your website and going forward here?
One of the things that I'd like to do is take the opportunity to continue my tour, I'm going to call it, of sitting down with the various stakeholders, getting some of their thoughts, and then start putting into policy statements as how I would like to go forward. In terms of public safety, I have some things in mind that, you know, because that's where I came from. That's important to me.
All right, so we're going to see that in the weeks to come. I'm sure we'll see James Shepherd back on this program. Mayor Warren, if she decides to run for re-election, we'll have an open door here. Anybody else who decides to run, whether it's Rachel Barnhart or others, we will see them here, and they will hear from you as well. Have a great afternoon, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.